as to chapter 9. Well, we're going to read here of how the Jews defend themselves against those who came to attack them, and how everything worked out so fantastically for them. Now, I suggest, though, that there is a more negative feeling to all this, and it's this, that they should have gone back to the land, and they didn't. They should have returned to Judah. They should have restored the kingdom, and they should not have remained there in the lands of their exile. The problem is that they had become wealthy, and that's why Haman says if you kill the Jews, there'll be a load of money going to the state treasury. And Mordecai means Marduk, Esther means star, which is a reference to Marduk, the star god. They had assimilated. God said, Jeremiah 16, I'll send fishers and hunters to drive you back to the land. And here it had happened, but God by grace had saved them, just like a parent gives a child what it asks for, even when you know it's not for the best, really. And unfortunately, they did not return to the land. And a lot of the language that's used here in Esther 9 is actually the language of the kingdom. For example, words of peace and truth, as Esther 9:30. This is out of Jeremiah 33, verse 6, what could have happened at the restoration. It could have all come true there in the restoration of the people to the land. But they didn't. And what with Esther now having the king's ear and Mordecai being second in command, you'd have really thought that they could have made this a great opportunity to get permission for their people to return. So they have instead a day of feasting and gladness, verse 18, but that's exactly the message of the restoration prophets. Feasting and gladness is to come to Zion. Isaiah 55, verse 12, there will be gladness in their land, the day of gladness. Isaiah 61, Jeremiah 31, all this could have happened if they had repented and returned to their land. But they don't, and yet they're being given a foretaste of what could have happened. I see the situation that happened here with Haman and this huge pogrom as really being God's final attempt with fishers and hunters to drive them back. And yet they don't respond, and very soon the Persian Empire is to fall to the Greeks, and according to tradition they kill Esther at that time. And so the opportunity is really lost, and they really end up assimilating into the Gentile world. They make a big thing about keeping now this new feast of Purim, but there's no mention that they were even keeping the basic Mosaic feasts at this time. Now, I said earlier that Haman was an Agagite, and I rather dismissed the connection between Agag and Gog, and instead suggested that we look to the historical Agag, who was an Amalekite, who was destroyed by King Saul. And we saw that Mordecai was a relative of Saul. He was a descendant of Kish. His line is traced right back to Kish, the father of Saul. So the victory against Amalek was being sort of played out again. And we're told that in the Moses says that the messianic figure would overcome Amalek at the last, and likewise in Balaam's prophecies, that a messianic figure would arise, a star in Jacob would arise, and would be higher than Amalek, than Agag. And so I think that what happened here was the potential fulfillment of that. This victory over Agag, over Amalek, could have been the fulfillment of the star of Jacob rising higher than Agag, than Amalek. And so they win these victories against their enemies. They slay those who want to persecute them. And really they have every opportunity to see the fulfillment of God's prophetic word to them. The curse is turned into a blessing, which is exactly the language of the blessings for obedience to the covenant in Deuteronomy 28. It's the language of the restoration prophets that the curse is turned into a blessing, and they should have gone forward and returned to the land. They didn't lay their hand on the plunder, on the spoil of the people they killed, exactly like Abraham in Genesis 14. He didn't do that. And the idea was to remind them, you're Abraham's seed. Think about the promises to him and believe in them and go back to the land where they can be fulfilled to you. But they wouldn't. Jeremiah 51 verse 20 says that the exiles in Babylon or Persia would become God's weapons of war with which to judge the nations who had taken them captive. And the way that they are now killing their enemies amongst those nations again is suggesting that the messianic restored kingdom could be coming about. But they don't take it any further. So it's a case of failed realization of divine potential. The whole idea that the fear of Mordecai fell on the people, this is a very similar language in a number of points in this chapter to what happened at the Exodus, that the fear of Israel fell upon Egypt, it fell upon the Canaanites. But again, the potential was not used. So what are we to learn from this? Well, it is really that, you know, God pampers us, really. He gives us what we beg for very often, even though he knows or foresees that it may be not the best thing for us. As I say, it's like the father in the prodigal son parable giving the inheritance to the younger son. He saves them from this terrible pogrom because he loves them. When really the intention was that this was the fishers and hunters which were to drive them back to the land. But they don't, unfortunately, go. And this is why, as far as I see it, the Book of Esther has a kind of sad ending, really, that they all end up wealthy and popular and everybody likes the Jews and everyone thinks that Mordecai is top bloke and all that. And yes, wonderful in a sense, but when things are going well for you, this is the problem. This is the really, really big problem. When things start to go well for you, it's the soft life that kills spirituality. This is the problem. And so it totally does not surprise me that God would give us suffering to prepare us for entry to his kingdom, to send fishers and hunters to fish us out of this life and to get us back to the way towards Zion and the things of his kingdom. And the fact he's so gentle with us is a huge mark of his love. But we must beware that we don't make those same mistakes as Israel did, or Judah at this time.